Hey, everybody, it's Scott again. Welcome to another episode of the Verbal Shenanigans Podcast. And we are happy to bring you another fantastic episode in the podcast here. Now, we have a couple sponsors that I'd like to talk about real quick before we begin the show. And one of them happens to be the Adirondack Brewery located in Lake George, New York. Now, this weekend in beautiful Lake George, October 6th, 7th, and 8th, where the leaves are just starting to change, join the Adirondack Pub and Brewery at the 7th annual Lake George Village Oktoberfest. The middle of the town is transformed into the Bavarian-style street fair full of local artisan vendors, kids' activities, and the Adirondack Brewery Beer Garden, where you can pair their seasonal Oktoberfest lager with bratwurst, knockwurst, weisswurst, all the worst. The event is free entry and family-friendly. For more information, head over to LakeGeorgeOktoberfest.com. Also, make sure you stop in for a pint and some food at one of our favorite places, the Adirondack Brewery. Now, we also have Demented Brewing. Demented Brewing is located here in Middlesex, New Jersey, right off of 287. Demented Brewing is one of the coolest places to go get a pint and just chill and taste all the offerings from a very new and awesome brewery. Now, they just released Oktoberfest Lager and Silent, their single hop Montueca IPA. Next Sunday, they're going to be releasing Henry VIII, their sweet potato porter. Every Sunday, they got something new coming out. Tuesdays, they do weird things in the tun, like they just did their pumpkin Imperial Pumpkin Stout on candied apples. Just a really cool brewery, pushing the envelope. That is DementedBrewing.com. Now, Manskirt Brewing. Manskirt is located in Hackettstown, New Jersey. Right in the old bank building off of Main Street. They have their Oktoberfest coming this weekend. 3 days of fun and German beers. At least three or four new German beers on tap. October 10th, they're going to celebrate their two-year anniversary with a party from 12 to 10 p.m. Oh, and this weekend, they have the Genesis Farm Harvest Dinner on the 7th. Tickets are still available. Go to eventbrite.com and put in Genesis Harvest Dinner, and it should pop right up. Go visit manskirtbrewing.com. Now, Susan Robb is a woman out of Toronto, Canada, who lives out her mission to inspire others. Susan is a client partner for the Center for Leadership Studies, original home of situational leadership. CLS is deployed in over 70% of top Fortune 500 companies. Susan also has a business as a speaker agent. Many of the guests that you've heard on the show have come through Susan, Bob Rathbun and Coach Jim Johnson, including the guest on today's podcast, which we'll get to in 1 second. But contact Susan if you're looking for professional development or help with your corporate companies or, workshops and whatnot. Look up Susan Robb, R-O-B-B, on LinkedIn. Finally, Trivia Revolution, fueled by craft beer. Trivia Revolution is a trivia company that I also host for every Wednesday night at Tap House 15 in Jefferson. Trivia Revolution is just a great way to go out at craft beer bars and breweries, play a little trivia. Even if you're in last place, you can win a prize. You can win prizes to the restaurant, bonus items. It's just a really fun time. Check out Trivia Revolution, fueled by craft beer. Now, today on the podcast, we have a man by the name of Sunjay Nath, who is just a really, really smart, funny dude, great business mind, motivational speaker all over the country, both Canada and the United States. Really funny guy, so you check out Sunjay Nath. We also have a woman by the name of Renee Ruiz, who was involved in Occupy Wall Street and many other causes and protests, and very appropriate guest for this time. So with that in mind, enjoy the podcast.
And you are listening to Sherbal Bananigans. Stay tuned and listen to this podcast if you want to know the secret to eternal youth and unlimited riches.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun. Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic, which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Uh-huh. Okay.
It's our thing now.
What you got now? We do this.
Uh-huh.
Every day now.
No, it's weekly.
Once a week now.
Yeah.
On Mondays. Much. What?
Once in a while, we tape two on a day and just push it out.
Push it out. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, listeners far and wide, but mostly in New York, New Jersey, and California.
Yeah, pretty much. And Texas.
No, Texas loves us. Wyoming, on the other hand, screw yourself.
Up yours.
Forever shenanigans against Wyoming. But welcome back to another episode. I hope you guys enjoyed last week, Ben Weinman and Punk and Chung. Got some good feedback on the episode. From some people that I know listen to that are into metal and, you know, grew up with the band. So it was definitely a cool interview. And then we also got, what did we get called, Nutty?
Yes. we were more nutty than chunkin', according to Steve Pierce of American Chunkers.
Maybe that's like engineering humor. Like, you guys were nutty, but not chunky.
You think he ran it by his wife? Babe, I'm going to write back this. What do you think before I hit send?
I'm going to nail these guys. but we had a that was a fun episode.
Steve, we read the comment, okay?
We didn't piss anybody off.
No.
We haven't pissed off anybody in a while. But we
last
have,
one I can remember is the Sasquatch Hunter.
The best is, remember I tried to get, those of you, we've talked about this before, but I tried to get the shark attack survivor on, and we were all set up. It was in Australia. And then he, cursed us off because, it was, the wrong time zone. And,
yeah, apparently Australia has an Eastern time zone just like the U.S.
And then, funny enough, I guess I messaged him again on Twitter, and he's like, yeah, sounds interesting. Just send me your info. I'm like, totally probably forgot about that. Yeah. So you pissed off the Sasquatch guy. The firefighters don't like us. Mm-hmm. I feel like there's someone else that doesn't like us either. But anyway.
Sean Kemp changed his number.
Sean, you're an ass. We'll get you, though. We'll get you.
We will.
One day.
Gonna get you.
Got Lenny. We got Lenny Dykstra. So, you know, but sad. It's a very sad day in America. Both, obviously, the Vegas shooting. It's really, it's just very hard to put into words, really. It's just I don't even know what you say. It's so easy. People already, I see online, make it political. And I don't care about your gun thoughts, man. If you, in a conversation like we're having right now, yeah, that's when we can talk about it. But, you got to post. There's 58 families that some might not even know if their kids are dead yet.
Sadly, we got to pray it stays at 58.
I know. We haven't even checked in the last couple hours. It could be up, you know. We had this conversation when the thing at Pulse happened about a year ago or whatever that was, a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
We had this conversation. People making posts and this is the Second Amendment right, or it's a race thing, or how are they going to report it since he's a white guy? It's nobody's
are they going to call it terrorism?
Yeah, it's just, how about we focus on the fact that a deranged man just rained bullets down on people going to concert. Rain bullets from 30 stories up, just
30
shooting
stories up, basically a perfect view. Had 30 guns, I think I heard.
I heard 10, but probably 10? Even more. Who knows?
Maybe it was. It was still just an insane amount. I mean, he was literally going in there to say, "I ain't going to stop."
This says Vegas shooting stockpile 17 weapons in his hotel room, explosive and 18 firearms. And thousands of rounds of ammo at his home.
Jesus. I mean, it's kind of good. He kind of offed himself in the sense that we don't have to deal with this guy in the world and possibly living it out in the jail. But sadly, all the families have to go to the funeral, and we'll never know why. That's a killer thing.
58 families are burying a son or a daughter. 59 says right now. At least 59 dead. 527 injured.
Oh, my God. I mean, even add to the magnitude of all these people in the hospitals, now if anybody gets into an accident or something like that, there's going to be low staff, so we're going to have basically more deaths that won't be associated with this. But, well, It's a sick, sick, sad world.
It's sick, man. It's sick. It's like every shooting. Not that one shooting's worse or worse than the other, but every shooting seems to be even more and more of a surprise. Like at schools, at movie theaters,
at churches,
at a food store apparently that happened and it didn't get reported well because Trump did something crazy that day and it like completely, I forget what it was, but apparently recently there was one like someone just opened up in a food store and started shooting people. Just kill yourself, man. Like,
go to some island where you're by yourself. You don't have to deal with any other people. You know, don't bring the internet or anything like that because you'll come back if you hear some stuff you don't like. Just go away. It's that simple. There are plenty of places where nobody will be around. Go into a cave.
What do you think? You think? I guess. I mean, of course, it's probably all different for every shooter that this happens to. Some are religious. Some are ISIS related. Yeah. Some are they call mental illness. But what do you think is the thought? Like I'm going to be remembered as the most insane man. Like I'm going to be remembered forever, kind of thing.
Well, it just
notoriety
on the like the one that opened up in the church. He thought he was the Joker. If you recall, he went into court with orange hair and. In his head, he literally thought, yep. I did something. I'm the Joker.
The food store one I was talking about, the kid posted all videos online telling his plan on what he's going to do on YouTube.
Oh.
Because I listened to it. That's now it came back to me. Let's do it on a podcast. It was all about this kid. And he thought that he was being gang stalked. I don't know if you ever heard the term, but it's... These people, it's generally people who have mental illness and are sometimes schizophrenic or very paranoid. They believe that, like, the government is choosing to watch them,
yeah.
That they see people, like, walking by and that they're obviously spying on them. Yeah. And they start to think that they've been victims of all this thing. And this guy was proving that he wasn't going to take it anymore. And it's just sick.
I mean, they all think in their head they're doing the right thing. And it's... there's no way of getting to them. I mean, a lot of them are just kind of to themselves, and there's no answers. I mean, that's the worst part. I mean, we can sit here all day, examine every single piece about it. Can we do better with diagnosing mental health? Can we put more money into mental health? We can go through the whole, okay, let's make this law, let's loosen that law, yeah. Point at this, look at the specific guns.
Right.
At the end of the day, it's somebody, maybe it was Joe Conte, I forget, but somebody just put it on Facebook, no matter what you do, you're not going to stop it. And it's the most deplorable, depressing, yet truthful thing out
there. That's what I think, man. If it wasn't 58, it would be 28 with different weapons.
Yeah.
22. You know,
if you have no guns, they'll go to explosives. If there's no explosives, trucks.
What we've been seeing. That's,
knives.
How do you stop someone in a truck?
There's no way.
You can't tell what someone's going to do. Even mental health, like, I get it, and I trust me. I know people very close to me with people with mental health problems directly in their family. And even that, say you do put – not all these people are around a lot of other people all the time. A lot of them live alone in isolation. So mm-hmm. How do you go about addressing this person's mental health when no one, yeah. when some of these people aren't dealing with anybody? They're kind of loners. They're, you know, like, what do you, is someone going to refer someone and suddenly they're going to get help? Like, it's a game that you can't win. It's a battle that, how are you going to figure this out?
And kind of add to it, the family of the guy. I mean, they got to go through the rest of their life as, that's the family of the guy. They got to deal with that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know what to say. I mean, there's
just
no good answers, and I'm not, and kind of like you said, and you don't shout out an answer because you don't know the answer. No matter how smart you are, if I get Neil deGrasse Tyson in here and said, Neil, solve this problem, he'd be like, I can't do that.
And like I said, I hate the expression, but the bodies aren't even cold yet, and people, their narrative starts. Yeah. Well, we got to tighten up the gun laws. Okay, I see that. Well, it's our Second Amendment. Like, oh, the president's going to pay more attention to this than Puerto Rico. It's like, you got to start the narrative before The family. May some of those things be true. Yes. May some of those that conversation come out of this. Yes. Should conversation come out of this? Of course. But it's like, and then I saw like a couple comics. I'm like, guys, come on. Like a couple comics making brutal jokes. Like three of them in particular. And I'm like,
nobody's ever succeeded in the let me tell a joke about a tragedy the day of a tragedy.
I get it. You're trying to be edgy, but you're a no name comic. Yeah. There's two that I saw today. You're a bar comic, like me or anybody else, and what are you trying to just make everyone? You're so shocking. Like, what if that was your brother or sister? You know, or your mother or father. Like,
I know comedy comes from tragedy, yes. But there comes a little grievance period, and then you kind of slowly get in there. I mean, let's be honest. We make 9/11 jokes now. I remember with the original OJ trial, and like my sister-in-law was trying to sound all preppy. You know, she's like, oh, it's so disgusting that people are making jokes. And I look at her, I'm like, you haven't laughed at one OJ joke. Mm-hmm. No, I haven't. And I just look at her and said, you lying little hypocrite.
Yeah, Nazi jokes. Pearl Harbor joke, whatever.
No, they'll be endless, and whatever next sad thing happens a month from now, somebody's going to do a twist of words. And, I mean, when you're kind of just need that relief, it's going to come out right, and you're going to be laughing your rear end off. And, I mean, I don't want to make jokes about Las Vegas, but it'll bound to happen. Somebody's going to tell a good joke, and hopefully it kind of calms us down. But at the end of the day, it'll never be in good taste to the who suffered.
Well, that's what I even said today. I said your little Facebook statuses and your prayers and your comments don't bring any of these lives back. They don't. Mm-hmm. You know, the prayers for Vegas. No. Something conversation has to start to happen. Whatever it's legislation or how do we as a society start to figure these things or even try to anyway. Like, but like let people grieve and like I don't know. Before you start slinging your political, I mean, as if I wasn't sick of it enough.
I mean, that's a sad thing. Like, I mean, I look forward to us doing this podcast every week, and something you happens, do? I'm like,
I don't. It's my dread every Monday.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. No, I do.
But, I mean, I know we come in here, we try to, you know, get some goofy stuff out, try to make people laugh, and the sad thing is, it seems like every Monday we gotta come up here and talk about another tragedy. And
I mean, yeah, let's talk about the real tragedy at hand. The football season's over.
Not for me.
I mean, what do you mean? They canceled the rest of the season. You didn't hear that?
No, I don't recall seeing that. I'm pretty sure I got something DVRing back at home.
No, the Giants season is over. It's terrible. 0-4. I don't mean to change subjects, but eventually we got to change subjects, people.
It was so cute watching Odell Beckham hopping around and as they were pulling his finger.
Yeah, I mean, say what you want about Odell Beckham. When he plays, he does play hard. Oh. You know, like he's a prima donna, wide receiver, shocking. He's talks too much. He makes bad decisions. He acts strange. But he's ridiculously talented, and he does play when he comes to play.
He seems like the player, like, 3 or 4 years from now, he'll get over kind of this stuff, and hopefully. You're like, oh, wow, oh, my God, and now he's, like, the leader of a team or something, whatever. As a Giant fan, you got to pray that's still in the blue and white, but, you know, it's kind of like DeSean Jackson. Like, people were looking at him like, oh, he's a baby, he's a talker, he's a thug, blah, blah, blah.
Yep.
Kind of went to Washington, kind of reinvented his career. Now he's down in Tampa and he's trying to compete now. So
yep, So I know we gotta shift gears from this. I don't want to talk about a whole podcast of. I think a spaceship is landing in the backyard.
Was there like a wind boat?
That was like a sound from War of the Worlds. Like
it sounded like those boats in Florida when you do like a gator tour and they rev it up.
The fan boat.
Yep. Thank you.
I went on one of those in New Orleans.
Yep, I went on one in Florida.
And pretty cool. I mean, I'm sure we'll have more narrative on the shootings and whatnot, but you're not tuning in to us to hear our jargon on shootings every week.
I thought we were CNN too.
I'm also bummed out about Tom Petty, man.
Yeah, legend.
I liked Tom Petty a lot. Like I was really into him for a couple years, and I've liked him over the years. I liked the Traveling Wilburys a lot, and it's funny, he was playing at the Prudential Center like a month or two ago in the summerish, and I was like, oh, well, that would have been really fun to go to, and I had something else. I was like, oh, maybe we should get tickets, and I didn't. And
boom.
I don't know, man. That for some reason, this one bothers me. I really liked Tom Petty.
Yeah, usually you mock people when the musical stars die and all. And I kind of saw your post. I'm like, all right, that hit him.
Yep. But, well, no. When people kill themselves hang them, yeah. And I didn't find him really talented. I think Tom Petty was a all time talent.
Oh, that's a legend right there. I mean, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. I mean. It's sad regardless. I mean, I was a Linkin Park fan, but I mean...
Yeah, of course it's sad.
Exactly. I didn't sit back and go, oh my God, this is the greatest tragedy of all time. I always like to bring up when people were freaking out with that guy from the Fast and the Furious died. And they thought it was
Paul Walker.
Yeah, and they thought it was like the worst thing. I'm like, I feel bad for him. He didn't cause his death. It seemed to be the driver. But at the end of the day... Fast and Furious is the only thing he did.
Yeah, there's only certain ones that hit me. MCA made me sad when the one Beastie Boy died. Mm-hmm. I thought that was pretty sad. Mm. I don't know, Tom Petty bothered. I mean, yeah, 66, not young, but
Prince
not old.
Prince kind of hit me a little bit just because, like, I remember when I was dating this girl and she's like, I want to go to Prince concert. And I was kind of like, oh, I don't know. I mean, I remember Prince. Yeah,
did you go?
Right. Yeah.
Cool.
We went to it. Yeah, and we went to it, and at the end of the night, I'm like, oh my God, that was one of the best goddamn concerts
I've
seen.
Sure.
He got on that guitar, he just destroyed it. I'm like, oh my God, I gained so much respect for him.
Prince was one of those guys I was never really into, but I knew how talented he was.
Yeah.
You know, it's just going to sound weird, but you know, like Ed Sheeran, like he's kind of like a poppy, you know, he sings a lot of songs now. That's another guy who's like ridiculously talented, but makes like pop songs. Like that's kind of how I felt about Prince. Like, but I knew like his guitar, like how ridiculous he was, and then he played like every instrument and stuff like that. So, but celebrity deaths, I'm trying to think of anyone that like I'm like, oh, hits me right in the feel. Listen, I'm not gonna hang myself over Tom Petty and write about it the next 3 days. It just I don't know. It just bums me out because I'd like almost been going through a Tom Petty like revival in the last year. Like, I haven't listened to this in a while. And like the Wilburys record I've been blasting a lot. And I actually have it right over there on the record player.
Huh.
It was the last thing I was listening to. And I'm like, oh, man.
I still remember as a kid when he had that video, the Alice in Wonderland one, Don't Come Around Here No More. I always, as a little kid, I always freaked out how they were into the cake.
Girl.
That always freaked me out.
You know what freaked me out? Last Dance with Mary Jane gave me a weird feeling, man. Where he's
Kim Basinger. He was dancing with her as a dead.
Right. She's dead. Like, that's a dark video. Mm-hmm. He's dancing with her, like, Weekend at Bernie's, but dark. Like, there's no comedy. And then, like, I forget what happens. They go off the pier or something at the end.
He puts her in the water, and then she floats up, and then she opens her eyes.
Yeah. That's a freaky video. That's a dark video.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I remember like being almost uncomfortable watching that back then. Like this creeps me out a little bit. Maybe I'll watch it tonight and see if it has the same like reaction to me. But yeah, I'm a little bummed out about Tom Petty.
And the sad when I saw it on Facebook, the first thing I gotta do is actually like Wikipedia because it seems like lately everybody loves to get that cute
gotcha, not dead.
Well, I think it was Ken Kranz who got me on Rick Bull from Night Court being dead and all. I'm like, oh, man, I love that show.
That was the one that got you.
Well, then, like, get me. It's not like...
Hey, Burley, want to go get a beer? No.
Oh, man.
No.
No more court in session.
Case closed.
The funny thing,
heaven just gained another judge.
No, he was a bailiff.
Sorry.
Well, the funny thing was, that was a show that it went like 3 years in a row where they had to replace somebody because the old lady died in it. They got an old lady bailiff to go off of him. She died. And they had the whole episode, I miss her so much. And then you get a new one. That one died. They ended up with... I forget her name. She was a black woman. Something I'll have to look it up.
But is she still a black woman?
Yeah, she's still a black woman alive. Good. She was in, like, Caddyshack 2, if I recall.
Oh.
The real classic with Jackie Mason.
Gee. No, I was just actually just Googling to see if there were any updates on our Dear David story. But nothing.
It'd be great if you go on the Twitter site and, like, David just pops out.
Yeah.
Stop asking questions.
Yeah, well, I'll look that up in a minute. But,
yeah,
all right. So I don't know. I got one little funny story, and then we have two guests on tonight.
All
so
right. I got two small things.
We want to get to our guests first and then come back?
Well, if we got a guest, we got a guest. They are the best. We got to go to the guest.
Oh, my God. Kill me. It just doesn't
What's that, Scott? I didn't have my earphones on.
It just doesn't stop.
It just gets better, buddy.
It's never going to stop.
We should go back to two-a-day podcasts.
I hate, as much as I love Mondays, anyway, let's get to the guest. It's guest time.
It is, Scotty?
Oh, God. I don't know what's worse, your normal hosting or your fake hosting?
I'm the co-host.
your actual real excitement or your brutally fake, like, oh, yeah? Is it time?
For
a guest.
Yay!
But anyway, you might not be excited, brother, but I'm excited.
I am excited. I love all our guests.
All?
When they first come on.
You love the idea of all our guests.
Yes.
And then
sometimes after that conversation stops, we go, yeah, let's leave it that way.
Yeah, maybe that one won't air.
Yeah, a couple times that happened.
Yeah. I know of at least two. Yeah. Well, only two in my head. They just weren't worth it. I don't know. Maybe.
I'm trying to.
I don't think.
Yeah, I think it's only two.
Yeah. But so our sponsor, Susan Robb, she's put us in touch with numerous guests on this show.
Great gal.
Paul Templer and Bob Rathbun and Coach Jim Johnson and Dave Andrechuk. Okay, one of my favorite interviews we've done. But she recommended a guy by the name of Sunjay Nath. Now, if you Google him, the name does pop up a lot in the old Google machine. And
that old thing's still chugging, man.
The Google.
Them boys just keep on hitting it with the broom to make sure it keeps chugging down information.
And he's an inspirational speaker. He's done a lot of talks and multiple business adventures, and he came out. He's trademarked for the 10-80-10 principle, which I'm sure is something that we is over our heads. But let's get Sunjay on the podcast.
Good evening, Sunjay speaking.
Hey, Sunjay, it's Scott Brennan and Mike Berlew of Verbal Shenanigans. How you doing, buddy?
I'm well. How are you boys doing?
Oh, we are doing great. Where are we calling? What we're calling Canada, I assume.
You're calling, yeah, just near Toronto.
Near Toronto. Mm. Yeah, we've had several Canadian calls, and then Susan doesn't tell me, and then my phone bill is like all international calls.
His phone bill tells him.
Well, let's be honest. As long as we can blame Susan, life is good, right?
Well, that's generally my motto.
Yeah,
that's kind of
cheap trouble.
That's the tagline of the podcast. You know, you're listening to Verbal Shenanigans. Blame Susan.
Exactly.
I called the IRS on her. You know. Not her doing anything,
perfect.
Just my taxes, you know?
Yeah. Blame Susan.
Mm-hmm.
Sunjay, thanks for giving us a few minutes here on the show. So we were just talking, when we get some of these different speakers that come on, and whether they're inspirational speakers or kind of business guides, it's always interesting to figure out how did you actually transition into that? Did you... And I see that you've been involved in a lot of different businesses and whatnot, but where did you get this start in this world? I see that you have an MBA and all this stuff, but have you always been trying to get into the business world?
Yeah, so I'll tell you that MBA thing was a total ripoff.
Oh, yeah.
I thought it said NBA. I thought I was going to play basketball, and I never saw a court one. Horrible.
Well, the Raptors never win anything, so you're better off.
It's true.
Whoa. Down boy. here's my background. I've actually never had a real job in my entire life.
I want your plan.
Yeah, there you go. My plan is called Sugar Mama. You know, I got the I got the mama part. I got to work on the sugar.
Yeah.
I started my speaking 23 years ago, and I was at the time studying engineering, and I was on a committee that was putting on a high school leadership day for a bunch of students, for a bunch of high school students. And one of our speakers canceled last minute. And the people on the committee all kind of looked at me and said, "Hey, you think you're funny? You fill in for them." And I'm like, what do I say? And they said, "We don't care. Just do anything." I was like, okay. So I went and I spoke there, and someone in that audience went, "Hey, that was really good. Will you come here and do this?" And I was like, okay. So I went and did that. And then someone in that audience said, "Come here and do this." And the third time I did it, someone actually gave me $45. I was a 19-year-old kid, and someone gave me $45 for speaking for like 40 minutes. And I was like, oh, at this rate, I'll be rich. And I was doing backflip. And at the time, there was a teacher in the audience, and she came up to me and said, "That was really good. How much do you charge to speak at a school?" And I went, "You can charge to speak at school?
$90.
And then that, you know, it just snowballed from there. And I've been doing this now, like I said, 23 years, spoken to close to a million people, over 2,000 live audiences. And the phone keeps ringing. So people don't learn from their mistakes, and they keep calling me back. It's great.
Right. Now, what you go up that first time when you say you were like 19 years old, what did you actually talk about? Or you just don't, you blacked out like that scene from Old School where Will Ferrell has to answer the debate questions?
Okay. Well, not to have people judge me, but I was one of those kids. When I graduated high school, I was valedictorian. I was student council president. I played volleyball in school plays, blah, 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 blah. And so I just went and chatted about the benefits. And the other thing, too, is I'd been to a bunch of leadership conferences myself. And
okay.
So I was in that world. And I just kind of talked about the benefits of getting involved and what happens and how it can actually be fun and it leads to other opportunities and that kind of stuff. It was all stuff I was really passionate about, which is probably why people kind of, I don't know, sniffed the sincerity and kind of went, oh, that was kind of entertaining. And this guy, you know, seemed really genuine. And so that's, like I said, it just kind of opened up from there.
What was it like going from impromptu to actually planning into a speech? Did you get more nervous? Did it get better? What were your thoughts as you went along?
I was never an impromptu guy. I'm too, I don't know, too anal retentive to do that. Mm. And then over the years, as I've kind of refined it, I realized I'm almost glad I didn't do it because I think it's unfair to a paid client to go and wing it. Here's the thing is when someone pays for a professional speaker, I think they're looking for a certain level of expertise and polish. And as a rule, if someone says to me, "Hey, we want you to come and do something and we want you to completely customize it," I actually won't do it because I don't think that's fair. As ridiculous as this may seem, I know that in some lines that I deliver, when I raise my right eyebrow, it's funnier than if I raise my left eyebrow. And so it's not to say that everything has to be the same every time. But there's got to be stuff that I know is true, tested, and will work every time. And then I can hide in newer material in that. So I'm going to always sandwich it between stuff that I know works. And then if it doesn't work, no big deal because we're on to the next bit that's going to work. And if it does work, then we constantly refine it until it becomes part of the polished piece, and then we start adding in new stuff as well.
It sounds exactly like stand-up comedy.
It is exactly like stand-up comedy. There's no difference. Actually, no, that's not true. The difference is, I'm going to offend all your stand-up comedians. The difference is you get paid a lot more.
Yeah. Well, that put it this way. I couldn't get paid less, so.
If you are a – no, sorry. Comedians get paid much less is what I'm saying.
That's what I'm saying.
If you are a funny speaker, it is awesome, and you can do very, very well. Even if you're kind of a middle-of-the-road speaker, you're going to do much better than a middle-of-the-road comic.
Right.
And if you are a speaker who's funny, that is an added bonus. The problem is you don't even actually have to be as funny as a comedian, but you'll be perceived as funnier because the stage is not set up for you to be a funny guy. And the whole demographic is completely different, too. I mean, what's a comedy club? People are drinking, and it's kind of like laid back. It's, "Hey, make me laugh, funny guy."
Right.
And the expectation is completely different. And you're a speaker. You think you're going to go about learn about leadership or communication, whatever. And then someone's funny, it's a huge bonus.
Interesting. Yeah, so, I mean, it makes complete sense.
It, I don't know if you've seen the documentary Comedian, which is about Jerry Seinfeld after he retired all his material. And, you know, here's Jerry Seinfeld getting booed. This is post-Seinfeld because people don't realize that, it's the timing, it's the punctuation, it's the diction, all that stuff. It makes or breaks you. And over years, you learn to refine it.
Side note, speaking of Seinfeld, did you happen to see this new special? He took all his jokes, like a bunch of jokes from the 70s and 80s, and redid them and retold them and kind of told the story of his comedy career as a special on Netflix. It's pretty cool.
That's cool. No, I hadn't seen it. I'll have to look that up.
Yeah, he filmed it at the comic strip, like what the club he came up in. It was very neat. It's cool. Hold on, let me shut the big dog up. Keep going, Mike.
Hey, stop talking about me. I mean, you're talking with so many people, how much do you have to adjust depending on the audience, whether it's age or amount or anything of that sort?
It's a good question, and depending on who I'm talking to, I'll answer it differently. The short answer is universal concepts are universal, but the way you explain it to different people is going to change. So if I watch The Simpsons with an 8-year-old, we both enjoy it for two completely different reasons. And so that's what you always want to do is you can have the same message, but based on age or based on demographics or based on industry, you need to tailor it. You need to change it. I often use the joke, as I mentioned too, I came up speaking to youth starting off in high schools, but these days I actually do a lot more work corporately. My joke that I use is I say I'm bilingual. I speak adult and student. And they're two completely different languages. And if you ever talk to an educator, a teacher, or administrator, that type of person, they'll totally appreciate that. And I mean, I'll give you a silly little example of how that plays out. I use this one joke often when I'm speaking to students, and I say, how many people here have really immature friends? And they all kind of joke and point to their buddy, and they're like, oh, yeah, right here, yeah, yeah. And that's funny for them. But if I go to a corporate group and I say that, or a group of adults, and I go, how many people here have immature friends? It's not funny, it's stale, and it distances me from the audience. But if I just change one word, I can still make the joke play. Mm-hmm. I can go up there and go, how many people here have really immature spouses? And you get them reacting like the kids did. And so it's often little subtle tweaks like that that make all the difference. Either you're going to draw yourself closer to the audience or you're going to, you know, separate more.
No, you on your website and just like reading a couple things, you seem.
Oh,
to
you were that hit, huh?
Yeah. You saw that spike.
Yeah, exactly. Went from 0 to 1. Thank you.
Killing it. You seem to, correct me if I'm wrong, embrace a lot of the, like even you said, you were the kid in school with the multiple different, you involved in multiple different things, but. I wanted to ask you about a couple of the things that you listed. One of them was says that you sang live with the police.
Okay. So there's a piece that I wrote. I was 19, so more than 20 years ago. That it was – I can't even remember what it was for. But the way it was written, it was – everything in there was written as true, but – there's a spin and a lie to it.
Okay.
So I did sing live with the police, which is absolutely true because I had a summer job working for the local police department, and we actually sang one time. But, you know, and the implication is it was, you know, the sting in the police, but no, not at all. Vicious, dirty lie just to try to tweak. And, you know, what they say, there's lies, there's damn lies, and then there's marketing.
Okay, so which one of these is a lie? Black belt, juggling, or completed a marathon, or are those true?
No, those are all completely true. I have a black belt in Taekwondo. I can juggle, and I at one point it said I ran a marathon, which would have been a lie, but I completed it because I had to crawl a good chunk of it. Kind of cute, actually. My wife and I trained for it and ran it together. We actually moved on skydiving together and ran a marathon together, and most couples, if they do that, usually either kill each other or get divorced. So we're proud of those.
Yeah, or give her the faulty parachute.
No, that's true.
Now, another thing I'm reading on, you say you talk about you never lose your temper. Now, with any kind of talking or comedy, there's usually like one person who wants to talk out while you're trying to say a joke or you're saying your speech. Has anybody come close where you have to like bite your lips or anything like that in all these years you've talked to different people?
Of course. Don't be silly. And not only do I talk to different people, I speak to youth. Come on. I've had, actually, in whatever, 2,000-plus programs, I've only ever kicked one person out of a program. And what's funny is it's the hecklers you get, generally you get hecklers more from younger kids than you get from adults. You do get them from adults as well, but the context of a nightclub, when you're a comedian, you're going to get way more hecklers because alcohol's in the mix. Mm-hmm. But when you're doing a corporate function, you know, generally people are going to be on their better behavior. If they don't like you, they're going to kick out. They're going to look at their phone. They're going to do something like that. So heckling on that side is not a major issue. For the youth side, yeah, more so. and so, yeah, exactly what you say. It's about biting your tongue, and it's an experience. It's an experience game. There's times where you just bite your tongue and you let it go and it passes. And there's other times, hey, sort of there's a level of escalation. Think of, you know, when you're in grade three goofing off and the teacher says, Scotty, stop it. You know, that's level one. Level two is you want to go to the principal's office. And then, you know, level three, you're sitting out in front of the door, et cetera, et cetera. So it's kind of the same thing. And I found, which is really interesting, every time I've gotten to a certain level of escalation where I threaten to kick someone out of the room, we're talking in 2,000 programs. That's happened maybe 8 or 9 times, so not much at all. But every time I've hit that level, the amazing thing is people actually cheer. And what's funny is I've always had a teacher come up to me afterwards going, I've been wanting to tell that kid off for so long. Thank you for doing that.
Yeah.
So it's one of those, you know, people actually do want to listen. And when someone's being a punk, they appreciate someone shutting them down.
Oh, yeah. I could definitely relate to that. But all right, let's get into the 10-80-10 principle. It seems to be one of your, your main bodies of work here. But for the average Joe, what in the world is the 10-80-10 principle?
All right. So the 10-80-10 principle is all about focusing on your strength. So let me break it down. You take any group of people and you can subdivide them into three groups: top 10%, bottom 10%, and majority 80%. By their definition, top 10 want to be there, the bottom 10 have to be there, and the majority 80 falls whichever group's more empowered. So if you're part of a group where the top 10 are revered, where people show up early and leave late and they love what they do, what happens is the top 10 gets empowered, and then the majority 80 follows them. And we call this a dynamic organization. The group moves forward. On the flip side, if you're in a group where the bottom 10 is revered, where it's cool to cut corners, to manipulate the system, to cheat, to steal, to lie, you know, the joke I use is we call that government. It's called a bottom 10 organization. And what happens is the bottom 10 gets empowered. They suck the life out of the majority 80, and the organization gets stuck and goes nowhere. So a couple places where you've seen this in your sort of day-to-day life is you've been in a presentation and maybe you went to watch a musical and it was nothing special, but at the end of the musical, you end up giving a standing ovation. And the reason you're giving it a standing ovation is because not because it deserved it, but because you happen to be sitting next to the mother of the lead role. And so as soon as that thing was done, the mother, who is top 10, jumping up on her feet, hooting and hollering, yelling, throwing roses, my baby. And out of politeness, because she's so empowered, you kind of get sucked into it and you find yourself standing because you were what we call majority 80. You follow the group. On the flip side, even in a presentation that is just the worst, brutal, most boring thing you've ever seen, you'd rather be eating your own spleen than watching this. And you are bored out of your mind. And what happens is everyone's checking on their phone or having conversation, and you find yourself suckered into that, and you're having a conversation with the person next to you as well. Why? Because the bottom 10 get empowered, they start using their phones, they start having their conversations, and everyone else kind of gets sucked into it. It's a law of momentum.
Right.
Newton talked about it, right? He said a body in motion tends to stay in motion, a body rests tends to stay in rest. Action follows action, inaction follows inaction, peer pressure, call it whatever you want. Mm-hmm. But we see this force constantly. So that's what this whole the backdrop of this 1080-10 is about. So then the question becomes this, is if you're in a position where you're trying to influence people, like hypothetically, say you run a podcast and you want to get people to listen to it and share it with people, who does it make most sense to target? Your top 10, your raving fans, your bottom 10, the people that, you know, use dartboard practice, or the majority 80? And the way it breaks down...
Huh. Our phone is in the bottom 10%, apparently.
All right, let's call him back. We were just about to learn how to get listeners.
Obviously, you didn't pay the phone bill, and that's what happened, right?
No, I was just saying, we were just about to learn the secret to get more listeners, and then it dropped out.
Mm. Yeah, you know what? And that's it. I'm not repeating it.
Scott, we got paying for his services now. Dang it.
Yeah, you should have paid the bill last time you called Canada.
Damn you, Dave Andrechuk.
So, I was saying, hypothetically, if you run a podcast, you have top 10, people who are raving fans. They love you. You have bottom 10, people who would rather eat their own spleen than listen to you. And you have majority 80 who kind of follow whoever's more empowered. So again, the question is, where do you send your resources? If you're trying to do a promotion and try to get people to listen to you, where does it make most sense to target? And all three of them make sense. You know, there's a rationale that says if you can get the person that hates you to become a raving fan, you can convert anyone on the planet. So that makes sense. The other thought is if you can get the majority 80 to follow you, well, you've got critical mass there. You've got a whole bunch of people. So that kind of group makes sense too. Mm-hmm. And then the third rationale would be, well, if you can get the top 10, first of all, if you're playing with only your top 10 fans, you're going to have better conversations. You're going to be more invigorated and motivated to continue doing what you're doing. And if you can somehow empower those people to get the majority 80 to follow them, well, that group makes sense too. And so if you run through an example, what you'll find is, generally speaking, the bottom 10 will suck every resource out of you before they ever convert. Mm-hmm. The example I often use when I'm doing live presentations is I say, you know, say your boss comes to you and says, listen, you guys, you're in charge of running the blood drive clinic we're running. And you have to go, people in the company go and get them to give blood. And I go, in any given company, there's a 10-80-10 split to giving blood. There's top 10 people who normally give blood. There's bottom 10 people who never give blood. And there's majority 80 people, who is most people, who they follow whatever their friends are doing. So if their friends harass them enough, they'll go give blood. If their friends don't care about it, they're apathetic, they'll follow their friends. And so if you go to a bottom 10 person, this is the person who normally doesn't give blood, the issue is we don't even know why they don't give blood. Because they may not be giving blood for really legit good reasons. Maybe they have a disease and they don't want to taint the blood supply. Or maybe they have religious objections. Or maybe they're scared of needles. Or maybe they're just a jerk and they're selfish and they want their blood for themselves. But the point is, it's not an assessment on who they are. We're strictly looking at the action. And the action is they don't give blood. And the typical response of what we do is we go, hey, right there, that guy right there, that's Billy. Billy hates giving blood. I'll win him over. And then we go find the Billies and we bombard them with 45 minutes of our best material. We're like, yo, Billy, yeah, you got to get blood, man. It's going to be awesome. You're going to save a life. You're going to get a muffin. You're going to get a juice. It's going to be the best. And after 45 minutes, we think we've convinced them. And have we? 99% of the time, absolutely not. In fact, they're not even listening to what we're saying. They're just off to La La Land doing their own thing. And they're waiting for us to kind of jump, to kind of pause to breathe so they can jump in and go, I'm out of here. Can I go now? I'm done. And so, like I said, they will suck every resource you have before they ever convert. And so that's probably not the most efficient, effective use of time. In fact, it leads to what I call the triple whammy. So you end up getting three whammies. Whammy number one is Billy hasn't converted. So that's one whammy. Whammy number two, I just spent 45 minutes trying to convince this guy of something I'm passionate and excited about, and he spits on me. Other than wet, how do I feel? I feel frustrated, beaten up, exhausted, and wanting to go home and take a nap. So that's whammy number two, demotivates me. Whammy number three, here's the most powerful one, is it all the people around Billy, how do they feel? They feel ignored. Because all the time and energy I was wasting with Billy, I could have been actually been making with, you know, spending with the people around them and making a difference. So three whammies happen. Number one, Billy doesn't infer. Number two, I get demotivated. And whammy number three, people around Billy feel ignored. But we can get to the Billies, but it isn't through direct relationships. It's through peer relationships. It's when I can get Billy's friends around him, who are maybe majority 80 people, when they start moving, Billy's more likely to move. Okay, so that doesn't work. So what about the majority 80 approach? Majority 80 approach, the problem with those guys is there's only one of you, and there's 80% of the group there. So if it's a group of 100 people, that's 80 people you got to target. And if you have limited time, limited resources, you're going to run through the halls of your organization, getting people to give blood in a very superficial way. You're going to point and go, give blood. Hey, save a life. Hey, go for it, man. Go make a difference. Get a muffin. And so after you running through the halls, are people going to give blood based on interaction? And the answer is probably not.
Right.
It could happen, and maybe a few people might, but for the most part, they aren't going to, because the majority 80 is a very large spectrum of people. This is the spectrum ranges right from I'm on the fence to convince me. The I'm on a fence people, you might pick them up by running through the halls going give blood, but not because of the relationship, simply because of the information. So they're just as likely to give blood if they heard you run through the hall going, give blood, or if they saw an email or they read a poster on the wall. But the rest of the people, they're not going to move because they need much more of a transformational relationship, and you're not going to get that by running through the halls going, give blood, give blood, give blood. So the bottom 10 approach is your triple whammy. The majority 80 approach, you're chugging along but pretty darn slowly. So what does the top 10 say? Top 10 says, all right, well, I'm going to talk to Sally over here. I'm going to go, hey, Sally, who's the top 10? I'm going to go, Sally, have you thought about giving blood? And if she's truly a top 10, before that word is out of my mouth, she's going to be halfway out the door going to give blood. But she's going to come back with a muffin in one hand, a juice in the other, and here's the best part. She'll become a champion of the very behavior she's trying to instill in other people. So she's going to, like I said, have a muffin in one hand, a juice in the other. She's going to elbow both her neighbors and go, yo, I just gave the life, and you can do this too, and get a free muffin. And she's going to explain how to do it. So what's gone on is the top 10 gets empowered. If the top 10 gets empowered, the majority 80 follows. Once 90% is on board, that's your top 10 plus your majority 80. Once you have that big group on board, the bottom 10 does something that I think is quite remarkable, and that is the bottom 10 breaks into two groups. One part of the group goes, wait for me, I want to give blood too. And the other part goes, what the heck kind of blood-sucking organization is this? I'm out of here. And they leave. So how does that play out for a podcast? You have top 10, bottom 10, majority 80 people. If you assume that your top 10 are loyal followers and they'll love you and you can just ignore them, I say it's a big mistake. Because the bottom 10 are going to be the hardest to convert. In fact, the bottom 10 may hate you because of something you did to them in high school. And so you running a promotion or getting a free pizza or whatever is not going to entice them. Whereas if you run the promotion and give the free pizza to your top 10 become raging advocates. They stand on a soapbox and kind of going, my podcast guys are the best because not only do they get great content and are they funny, they get free pizzas. And by them saying that, they're more likely to affect the majority 80. The majority 80 goes, what? My podcast guy doesn't give me pizza. Hey, tell me more about that. And so what you're doing is you're basically they're magnetizing the group and pulling them away. And then again, once you get 90% on board, those bottom 10 people that are like, that hated you before were like, well, my guy doesn't give me pizza. And well, high school is a long time ago. Well, maybe I'll give him another chance. And then they're going to be much more open to it. So there, I rambled about. So that's what 10-80-10 is all about. It's about focus. It's about finding your top 10, leveraging it, focusing it on it, and moving to you to where you want to be.
Okay. I just want to be clear that I think we are not giving out free pizza to our listeners.
All right, I figured this out, Scott. We had to get a bunch of muffins and never podcast to a guy named Billy, apparently. Yeah.
Pizzas are not going to all the listeners, so please don't email.
Unless but, Papa John's, yeah. If you're out there.
You could use the sponsor. And by the way, I they don't get pizza, but I do, right?
You know what? We might be able to get you a slice, mm-hmm. especially you Canadians don't know anything about pizza.
Mm.
There you go. Pizza's Italian.
Pizza. Mm. I mean, we're in Jersey and New York, so I mean, we got the pizza market cornered here.
Pretty much.
But so now that you do these kind of speaking events for a living and you work with businesses, now when people like hire you, do they hire you more to just come in one time and speak, or is it more like a working relationship where they can kind of keep consulting with you, or is it both?
It's both. However, the bulk of my business is sort of the one-time thing.
Right.
So I go in and I'll do a keynote, and you know what? It's amazing. And then the joke that I often use is I say I'm a professional reminder. I tell people stuff they already know, but I hopefully say it in a way that reminds them, and I package it in a way where they go, yeah, of course. And then they go do it, and then they get the results. I was speaking for a group, and I 3 or 4 years later, it was a conference. They brought me back, and a guy comes up to me and says, hey, you know what? Heard you speak. 3 years ago, you were here. Heard you speak, and I run a company. Based on what you said in that hour, we completely changed the way we did our business. And he goes, and he was telling me we had these results out of that. It was like great, like a really, really good testimonial. And I was like, well, what the heck did I say? And basically he said, you know, focus on your strengths, which is funny because this guy ran a $500 million company. And it was a huge company, but I'm like, it's not that he didn't know it, but he just needed to hear it at the right time. And so there are people like that who just need to be reminded, and that's all they need is the hour, and they go. But then there are other people that are like, yes, it resonates with me, it makes sense, but it's too much work and I don't want to do it. Or we need a third party that we buy into the philosophy, we love it, but we need a third party that doesn't make it look like it's a management push. So there are things like that that come in. All right, I'll do a half day, a whole day, an ongoing kind of relationship. But hands down, the bulk of my business, probably 80% of my business is kind of the one-hour keynote.
Now, Sanjay, you seem very excited about talking about your whole career and everything that you've done. Have you ever had to motivate yourself in the morning to get ready for a speech? Maybe stomach's not feeling right, hit traffic at the wrong time, didn't get that second cup of coffee? Is there any time where you got to just kind of tone into yourself and be like, you can do this, you can do this?
You gotta motivate to motivate.
No. Short answer is no, which almost sounds fake, but it's true. For one thing, I never had a cup of coffee in my life, so that's I'm not worried about the second cup. I'm an early riser, so that's not an issue. The few times where it's been a struggle for me to get on stage, it has to do with like an illness where I've had a fever or a twisted back or something stupid like that. And in those cases, it's not that I'm regretting getting on there, because I love what I do.
Right.
It is such a trip. And anyways, those few times where I've been sick or whatever, I get close to the stage and then adrenaline kicks in and it carries me through the hour, and then I get off the stage and I feel like crap. But that's as close as it's ever come. I feel so blessed and privileged with the opportunity to go and do what I do. But like any job too, there's things that suck about it. Hands down, the thing that I like least about this is the travel.
Right.
So I have 3 sons. The year before my eldest son was born, I did 108 flights. And so, I know that gambit. And you know, it's funny too, because people go, oh, it's so nice, you must travel, it's gorgeous. No, it's not. You see an airport, you see a taxi, you see a hotel, and it's completely different if you're traveling with family or friends. But so there's things about it that I don't like. I don't like sometimes where I'm like, oh, frick, I gotta fly for 6 hours. And this happened just 2 weeks ago. Fly for 6 hours to drive 7 hours to get to a program.
And so that,
not great. But at the same time, it's not.
Pros and cons to everything.
Absolutely. Except for podcasts. There's only upside to that because you get free pizza.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so, all right. We'll stop pushing the free pizza podcast because if we start that, we're going to be broke, even more broke. But so before you get out of here, I was told to ask you for a brief Cinderella story. And I also wanted to ask you about this row, row, row your boat. this row, it says on your site that you were learning to perform row, row, row your boat in
rounds by myself.
Yes. Now, is that another lie?
No, it's not. And but I suck.
He did with the police, Scott.
Him and Sting.
Technically speaking, the policing's not a lie. It's just your perception's all messed up. Not my fault.
Okay, Neo.
I'm a believer of when people present, and to be an effective presenter, you need ways of hooking and making your content stick. And I think everyone has different ways of doing that, but the core of it always has to do with enticing an emotion within the audience. And so what is that emotion? It can be humor. It can be sad. It can be empathy. It can be shock. It can be fear. But if you look at all the effective presentations you've probably ever seen, think of any movie you've watched that you like, it always conjures up some emotion.
Right.
And so the really good presenters and good teachers you had and good professors or whatever, all able to do that. Some do it consciously, some do it unconsciously. And so actually Susan said this too. She said, oh, you'll enjoy the guys, they're goofy like you, and it's just part of having fun, because
I'm offended
things better. As am I, because she compared me to Americans.
About that. Oof. Dang.
Exactly.
Oof.
We got to build that wall on the other side.
I know. Two walls now. Two walls.
You talk to Trump. Anyway, so the idea of row your boat. One of the things that I do is I use humor, or at least I try, depending on if you ask my wife or kids. I try to use humor, but I'm also a gimmicky guy. I have a degree in mathematical engineering, and so there are certain things that I think are fascinating and cool that other people would call nerdy, which is, again, very offensive. This is all the preamble to say, like, the thing, like, learning to sing Row, Row, Row Your Boat in rounds by yourself is something I've been fascinated with for years, and I suck at it, but I'll give you an attempt as to how it actually goes. It goes, row, row, row your boat, row gently, row down the stream, your boat, your manly down the street. So the idea of going back and forth.
Okay.
It's silly and ridiculous, but yes, that's that's kind of where that comes from. Along the same lines that you're asked to speak to the Cinderella story,
right?
I don't know if you know what a spoonerism is, but a spoonerism is when you mix up your words or mix up your words. And so where it apparently comes from is there is a professor in England named Spoon, and he was the quintessential absent-minded professor who would inadvertently mix up his own words all the time. And so hence the term spoonerism.
Right.
And so as the story goes, and I'm not sure if it's folklore, urban myth, or actually a true story, but apparently one day he was toasting the queen, and he said, "Here's to the dear old queen," and what came out was, "Here's to the queer old dean." So I tell a story of Cinderella using spoonerisms. So it's a fairy tale about a giddle earl named Rindercella who lives at the hop of the tail with her two stubbly up sisters. And so that's one of the signature pieces that I will use for various groups when I feel it's appropriate. It gets in the lap, get to the emotional state,
right?
But I actually have a way of tying it into my 10-80-10 concept, so that it's one of these fun things that's lighter on message and heavier on humor, but again, relevant to tie it in toward the end when people's brains are kind of saturated and full.
Yeah, Scott, so that's what happens to me.
Right, that's why you mix up your words.
Yeah, it's just I spoon you, Scott. That's what happens.
No.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. I'm spooning you right now, probably.
Who's big spoon and who's little spoon?
I'm definitely the big spoon.
Well, I'm the one doing this. I'm the big spoon.
Whatever.
I'm the co-host.
And remember, you cannot use a spoon with a pizza.
In Canada, maybe. But, Sanjay, thanks so much for coming on. Good luck with all the things you're doing. You seem like you you almost need to be less busy if you're doing 108 flights a year. But thanks for giving us some time. And where can people go and check you out if they want to check out your work or hear you speak or see where you are?
Sure. They come to my house, but if that doesn't work, I'll give you my website. SunjayNap.com, SunjayNap.com, SunjayNap.com.
All right, man. Excellent. Thanks so much, and we'll talk soon. Guest time, Berlin.
Again? I'm so happy.
Well, how do you know this isn't going to be the first guest on our next show?
I rescind that last statement.
God, your voice goes from like this calm talking volume where like I've got you dialed in on the pocket, and then it goes so loud that like the meter goes like there's this little peak meter, and just like it's blinking red.
Scott Malamars!
No, don't do that.
Oh, I thought it was a contest. Did I win?
How loud can I make this recording?
You want that answer?
No. You remember that.
You will find that out one day if you'd like.
No, you remember that we have like people that listen to this and it's in their cars and stuff. Uh-huh. And like they're listening to it and then you scream and they're like, we're done with that.
Berlew caused another 8-car accident today.
All these deaths and they just look at what the last thing on these people's phones was. It was this episode. But
Verbal shenanigans worth dying for.
Killing one listener at a time. All right, what are we doing?
We're doing a guest here. This is actually
We're
brought
doing
to
the
us.
Guest?
Yeah.
This is getting weird.
Mm-hmm. And this is a friend of my beloved Isabel Lialy here, Scott. So
yeah?
We have to be nice to her.
No, we don't.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right.
We don't have to do anything.
Yeah, I keep forgetting that. Why do I do the stuff that I do?
Okay, so her friend's coming.
Her
on.
Friend.
Big whoop.
Yeah. Well, her friend, Renee Ruiz, she's on the board of nursing in the state of Washington.
Mm-hmm.
She was a part of the Occupy Wall Street movement. Mm-hmm. And she's going to be talking to us about all the different rallies and protests she's a part of. She's very much into trying to get more rights for nurses throughout the world. And again, it's a big problem working in these hospitals, getting over patients, dealing with certain things. And, you know, keeping them safe and making sure everybody gets the care that they need.
All right. So let's get Renee on the line.
What?
Hello?
Hi, is this Renee Ruiz?
This is Renee. How are you?
We are doing well. This is Michael Berlew and Scott Brennan from the Verbal Shenanigans podcast. How you doing?
I'm good.
Oh, awesome.
What's up, Renee?
Hi, I'm sorry?
No, I said, hey, what's up, Renee?
Oh,
that was a very tough question,
not a lot,
Scott.
Not a lot, just ended my day.
We asked the cutting-edge questions.
Yeah.
What's up?
Don't ask her about the weather. I warned you.
Don't ask her about her day. She doesn't like that.
So, Renee, how's her things going out in Washington? And more importantly, do you have dirt for me on my beloved Isabel so I can
just
hold on?
Let's just turn that.
Oh, the stories I can tell you about Isabel.
Oh.
Well, it's gray and rainy here. I know that's weird to hear about Washington State, but yeah.
I would take rainy right now. It's like a million degrees here in New Jersey.
Yeah.
It's awful right
Jersey
now.
Jersey can't get the hint that it's
in the Northeast.
Autumn, pretty much.
Yeah, this is almost October. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But why don't you tell us a little bit about, I mean, you're on the nursing board in Washington. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what made you get into nursing and your education and how'd you get up to your position with the board?
Okay. Well, honestly, I'm not a nurse.
Oh.
But I have represented nurses through National Nurses United. I was with them for about 7 years, and I worked on nursing practice and policy for years. And then a couple of years ago, I decided to jump ship and come up to the Pacific Northwest, where my family is. And I began working for UFCW 367. And I represent mostly grocery workers and textile workers and some other folks in between, other kinds of retail, up to and including I organize cannabis workers from seed to sale. And I you know, was bored because that didn't seem like enough things to do. So the governor decided to appoint me to the Nurses Quality Care Commission in the state of Washington, which oversees the licensure, the education, the discipline of nurses.
Now, I imagine organizing cannabis workers is a lot easier than organizing cannabis smokers. Because you...
it takes a while.
Yes and no. There's an overlap.
Yeah.
There's definitely an overlap.
Oh, there. I got some friends. Trying to get them even out the door is a challenge. So God bless you and your work. No, but when you oversee and you represent them, what does that actually mean to, like... like someone who knows no idea what you're talking about, like myself. Like, what do you mean by you represent? Are you representing them in court? Are you representing them on contract disputes? Where are you stepping in?
All of that, because UFCW 367 is a local labor union.
Mm-hmm.
So my particular job is I am, and this sounds really fancy, but it is what it is, right. Internal and external organizing director.
Mm-hmm.
So I bring new folks in and teach them all of the amazing things and the amazing power that they have being in a labor movement. And then I also work with folks who already belong and working with them on how to use their power in the workplace.
And my dad, I'm growing up with him in a union. There's a lot of great things that keep the workers safe, but there's a lot of pushback and all. How do you kind of balance being a representative, making sure that they do their due diligence, but at the same time making sure that the places are not overworking people?
Well, it's, you know, like anything else. I mean, if you're engaged in the process, if you're communicating properly, if you're paying attention to what goes on in the shops, you can tell. You can tell when someone has an actual grievance or they just have a gripe. whether or not, you know, like, you know what the work plan, you know, the work plan is, what the job description is, because if you're negotiating a contract, you have to know what the job is that you're actually negotiating the contract for. And so a lot of times what you're looking at is the employer following those guidelines of what the job description set out, or are they looking for people to work outside their job description? You know, employers like to take advantage of, like, hey, your job was to sweep up area A, B, and C, but, you know, we think we're going to throw in D and E, and we know that's really not your job description, but go ahead and just do that. And you know, most of us like to do a good job, and, you know, our boss seems, you know, the authority. So we end up doing it and then finding out that, like, they really overstepped their bounds.
Now, I know,
still need to go just back to A, B, and C.
Yeah. Now, I know, talking with Izzy, some of the troubles she kind of worked with dealing with certain hospitals and so forth. What are you seeing nowadays with healthcare and what's going on with the nursing? Are you liking where they're going? I know you have gone through a lot of protests and rallies and so forth with different causes, but is there anything that you're liking what you're seeing where it's moving forward for the nurses union, or are we in trouble when we head to a hospital?
Well, I mean, I want to say first and foremost, every nurse I've ever worked with has always thought of patients and patient safety first. That's kind of, you know, the gold standard. That's what you should always think of as a nurse. And again, I don't represent nurses currently, but I will tell you that I am still a big nursing advocate. What I see the biggest problem is, and, you know, Isabel and I talk about this a lot, it's patients that are getting sidelined for profit. Because of corporate medicine. And here's something interesting. So how a lot of times hospitals are funded is they're funded through Medicare and Medicaid reimbursement. There's a lot of patients, you know, aside from private health insurance and out of pocket, they're paid mostly by the feds or the state. And there's a guideline along that with that that has really, I don't know, in the last decade or so, or maybe the last two decades, has evolved into this hospitality measure, basically saying, is the patient having a good time in the hospitals?
Oh.
You know, where their pillows fluff.
You know.
Like,
play some board games with them. They'll have, you know.
You know, I guess, you know, was the food good? Was, you know, were your pillows fluffed? All sorts of things like that, including what has evolved into the fifth vital sign, which is pain. So you really have put healthcare workers in a bad situation where the hospital, who's all about profit, is looking about, well, we're not going to get our reimbursement from the feds or the state unless we, you know, checkbox all of these things, that we did all these things for the patient. You know, they were happy and all the hospitality needs were met and their pain was good and all sorts of stuff like that. Not taking into consideration the fact that no one's happy when they're in the hospital. You don't feel good.
Right.
Right? You're not there because, you know, you were just bored. You're not there for a vacation. So didn't factor that in. And then honestly, my opinion is they factor things like pain in too much. Not to say that I want anybody to be in pain. Pain is not a fun thing. You shouldn't have to be. But you kind of opened a window, which kind of added to our across the country opioid addiction problem. Because people thought about instant gratification for pain.
Mm-hmm.
And you're scoring hospitals on it and nurses and other healthcare workers.
Wow.
At the same time, you're cutting healthcare workers and nurses from the bedside. Mm. It's just a vicious cycle. But really, it all comes down to where is the money in healthcare? That's what I see. And I think that that's dangerous. You open up things like pain clinics. You open up things like, you know, surgery centers that turn into just patient mills.
Mm-hmm.
Of like, hey, come in, get something done right here on the spot. Don't have to stay the night. There's not, you know, we can't do anything for you if you crash. You know, if your heart stops, really, we still got to call 911, but we're gonna do quick surgeries in and out the door really quick and huge profits.
Mm. Now, being involved in that and being in various different unions, and you're talking about like the hospitals and the money making side of it. What do you think the answer is? Like, I know this is a big question, but what do you think the answer is as far as healthcare? You know, nationally, like, do you think what would bring down some of that cost and eliminate some of that profiteering on healthcare? Like, do you think it's universal healthcare is the answer? Do you think it's it should be left up to the states? Like, what do you feel?
Universal healthcare, I totally believe in it. I think that healthcare is a human right. It is not.
How dare you?
Right of class and position, and or race. Too. I mean, that definitely factors into access and a bunch of other things when it comes to healthcare and medicine.
As I talked about before, you and Izzy were a part of how it's almost 6 years ago, the Occupy Wall Street movement. Why don't you tell us a little bit about how you got involved with it and some of the stories you got from that event?
Okay, well, that was definitely a wild time, and you know, made some great longtime friends. I mean, Izzy and I are going to be, you know, ride or die for life. How I got involved was through the union I worked for at the time, National Nurses United. saw that this was a place in time where politics was going to street action, and this was an evolution of things that we had been working on for a long time within the social justice movement, but and workers' rights and all sorts of things. So they really invested time and effort and staff into really being engaged in the Occupy movement, particularly in New York, but in other places around the country too. And I was one of the lucky staff that got to go to the epicenter in, you know, in Zuccotti Park. And so we, you know, working with nurses, the first thing is nurses take care of people. And so we took it upon ourselves to set up medical and first aid operations. So because you have a whole lot of people and it's starting to get cold and it's you're on concrete and all sorts of stuff, and people just need some sort of place to talk about healthcare, but you also need some place to, like, bandage somebody up. Help them through that that conversation. Yeah. Help them through the conversation of, like, seeking more medical care. And so it got to be really kind of twofold, where it was a really good space to start talking about corporate healthcare and my words for it, the evils of corporate healthcare, but also to make that larger connection with people on a really human level about, you know, a lot of people are away from home. A lot of people had never done any kind of direct action. This was a long-term committed engagement for it. It was also a way to talk with nurses who had not necessarily been engaged in social justice or activism or even political advocacy. And so that's kind of where Izzy came in, where she, you know, she came in as a volunteer for where the action was. You know, this was a huge moment in time and a lot of publicity and a lot of people were going in droves. And I think, and Isabel's a really good example of someone who came in, you know, hadn't been a nurse for a long time, but had a lot of the political ideas. And this is a great avenue for her to get to really concentrate the research on that and actually get some practical, like, experience with working one-on-one with people from all different walks of life and, you know, levels of education and, you know, in different socioeconomic backgrounds. And we ran the gambit in that small little park and in that little tent that, you know, we were running first aid out of. I think it was actually the first day I met Isabel. I think it was a really kind of a landmark day for me, where kind of, you know, the wheel hit the road and everything kind of came together. And it was a moment that I thought really there could have, should have, would have been much more attention on. Doctors Without Borders came in to give flu shots.
Mm-hmm.
To all the folks in Zuccotti Park who had been camping there for, at this point, a few weeks. And we knew that tis the season, and we were going to have a lot of cases of flu coming through our little tent. So we lined up folks to get their flu shots, and then something crazy happened. All of a sudden, we had people in ties and dress shoes and dressed for work who all worked for all of those companies there on Wall Street that were in low-level positions that were not provided health insurance.
Mm-hmm.
Who, for everything everybody wants to say about the Occupy movement and how all those Wall Streeters wanted us out and whatever, was not true. They got great benefits from us being there, right, including free flu shots. But I thought it was really telling that these big corporate entities that were basically stealing from many, many people, which we all know now, and we all probably knew then, but weren't providing basic things like healthcare for their employees who were, you know, wide-eyed and excited about working in this world of finance, mm-hmm. where it was all about the dollar and it was all about I'm going to get rich quick, but I can't afford a flu shot.
Mm. Now, being through the whole Occupy movement and the beginning and end of it, did you see it as a success? Did you see the whole process and everything as a fulfilled like statement, or did you see it fall short, or how do you feel about it?
I think that there's definitely things that we could have done differently, mm-hmm. you know, as far as, you know, getting the word out and maybe pushing on some things a little bit more than others. But I think, you know, I think the success of it is still to be measured. I think that there are parts that are wildly successful. We changed the conversation. We now talk about the 99% versus the 1%. That's straight out of Occupy. Right. We talk about, you know, street action. We have, you know, there are still networks greatly developed in major cities that all came out of Occupy. And there is impact on the healthcare debate, on the debate about finance, about, you know, money in the election process. All of those things we may have been whispering about, but we weren't talking about. So I think in that way, Occupy was amazingly successful. I don't think that the Occupy movement was ever supposed to be like, there was never supposed to be an Occupy party. That wasn't like it wasn't supposed to be the creation right. of a third party. So I think in that way, I mean, it's been wildly successful. I think it continues to be successful. I think it still brings a lot of conversations to the forefront. I think that there are many folks who learned a lot there and have taken on to become leaders of their own movements, whether they be large or small. But I think definitely it's been successful, and I think it continues to in a whole lot of ways.
If they had another Occupy right now, where do you think they would focus on? Would it be our current political debates that are going on right now as they're trying to get rid of Obamacare and go to a new system? Is it the insurance companies themselves? Is it the companies not giving good enough insurance to the employees?
I think that there is space to, quote unquote, occupy a whole lot of issues. I think one of them, you know, is the healthcare thing. You know, the healthcare system, the business of all of that. Healthcare, you know, the debate before that was about Obamacare. Like, oh, we're going to get Obamacare. Now, here's the thing. Do I think it should be repealed? Not in the way that they're doing it. And not for the reasons that they're trying to go after it. I've always believed that quote unquote Obamacare was insurance reform. It had nothing to do about access or ability for folks to get health care, improving health care, or anything like that. It's about moving money from insurance company to insurance company and all of that. And that was really became true when they took out the public option in Obamacare. So that, you know, that to me, it again, it didn't reform healthcare, anything like that at all. But through Occupy, the conversation has changed from yay Obamacare, yay the affordable healthcare plan, everybody's going to have access to insurance, to single payer. That's the conversation that we're having now. I don't necessarily know if that would have been a national conversation, to be taken seriously, had Occupy not happened. And I think that's the space that we're going to have to be in, because there's those of us who, gosh, for the last 15, or more than 15 years now, I'm getting older by the minute, have been talking Medicare for All. We've been, you know, talking that on the more like, I don't know if you want to call it the radical left, but that's where I worked. We've been talking about Medicare for All for a long, long time, but it wasn't seriously part of the national debate until until Occupy happened and Bernie Sanders happened. And so I think that that actually is a good space for Occupy to be in, is in the single-payer debate. And I think that actually that the Occupy movement from Zuccotti Park actually brought that to the national stage.
As you've been fighting for different rights and fighting for a union, have you dealt with other people that kind of you have to get your views across, or has there been a lot of stonewalling going on? Are we making progress, I guess, is the best question in all of this.
I absolutely believe, if I didn't believe that we were making progress, I probably couldn't get up in the morning. Like I said, I've been doing this for almost 20 years, and I'm a true believer. You know, my job as an organizer, and now, you know, as an organizing director, teaching others how to do this kind of work, is having that conversation with folks who are thinking one way, and that you are turning them to see things in a different light, and how we are collectively all together. And I think, I mean, Sunday was a huge thing.
I was
going
to get to that
about,
with you. Yep.
I'm jumping ahead, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that that's a huge thing, a huge, like, wake up. People are awake. People are absolutely awake. And I think for a long time people have been awake, at least, you know, those of us who identify as diverse or people of color or different ethnicities. I think that we've had to, for survival, be awake. But sometimes we had to struggle to find our voice, maybe. And so I think that because of tragedy and because of you know, this new taking away a filter of the opposition,
mm-hmm.
who they now don't graciously stand by and pretend like they're not full of rage and hate,
mm-hmm.
that we on the crux side of history are finding our voices and being able to do collective action. I mean, in ways that we never thought of before. I mean, think back, I think it was the 1968 Olympics in Mexico City,
mm-hmm.
where the two sprinters stood and did the Black Power symbol,
mm-hmm.
and they were shunned. That was about 50 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And they were shunned and no longer ever were able to be part of the Olympics. You know, fast forward into yesterday, where over 100 athletes on national TV took to their knee, not to dishonor anything about the U.S., but actually to call the U.S. out about supposed to be the home of the free, the land of the free and the home of the brave. We all need to be part of that. And by that collective action, it was amazing. Did we actually think 2 years ago, 3 years ago, 5 years ago, that kind of action would have taken place and it would have started, taken the debate to the next level? Would it have been a rallying cry in the same way that it has been? No, I think that is a major step for all of us in that are, you know, work in the workers' rights movement or the human rights movement or any of those things, that those of us who are lucky enough to work our careers in those movements, but also folks who have other careers but have true beliefs in the movement that we work in. I think that it's a huge movement forward with these big collective actions and, things like the Women's March. We didn't believe that those things were possible a few years ago. And I think it's really this, you know, the new administration, I'm still calling them new, it's been several months. I think that it's a little bit of shock to the system that people are rising up, and they're rising up collectively. it's not just these little bands of people yelling that you can't hear. It's huge and it's impactful and it's thousands upon thousands of people, and they take to the streets and they all watch and cheer as football players are taking to their knee on their TV sets. And it's, you know, there's large debates all over social media. I don't think that the opposition was prepared for this. And maybe we weren't as much either. So it's been a little bit harder to kind of control it. Mm-hmm. And maybe we shouldn't control it. Mm. It's organic and it is definitely moving forward.
I mean, that's great to hear. I mean, it's the best way. I've always been concerned as of late that it's going to go to violence, the way the other side has kind of been a little more pushy than, I mean, I don't want to call it all on Republicans, but it seems to be a more aggressive side as of late, and I don't know what's going to calm it down, or if we can all point to the one guy that we all haven't said yet.
Who's that? Sean Kemp.
Yeah.
That bastard.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
And I think that the debate around that is a little different. I have a very different perspective on it. You know, I'm Latina. I grew up in Kansas, of all places in the city. And, you know, the racist slurs and the violence and aggression isn't new to me. Isn't new. I think that what's new is people who have not had to experience that, it's now on their faces.
Mm.
And I think that that's where it's different for some folks. For many of us, I mean, we grew up with it. It's not this new police brutality debate isn't different than the debate that happened at my Thanksgiving table. All of these things, particularly around race and workers' rights and things like that, aren't different than what I grew up with.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really interesting when... but now it's happening on such a large scale. And again, people have, the new administration has allowed people who had to have that public filter on just to tear it off. Right. So I think that now that other people are experiencing it, it's a shock to the system.
Yeah. I mean, I could definitely see that for sure. I mean, it's hard to put a finger on like one exact thing. Obviously, there's so many positives to some of the things that are going on, and it's very interesting because it's these things that also unite us. They also divide us, and it's like you try to find these, I don't know, these talking points, which you hope are what created, but it seems like sometimes the divide is so great that no one wants to listen to each other. You just always try to find the middle ground. Like in your everyday life, you meet so many people who are, I get it, I understand, but it's to me, it always comes back down to the media and the way it's portrayed. It's always portrayed as
one good, one bad.
Yeah, I was gonna say left and right. That's not. I didn't even mean like left and right, as far as political. I mean like it's left or right. It's black or white. It's heads or tails. It's mm-hmm. it's one way or the other way.
No gray area. Where
there's always the general person you sit in the backyard with and have a beer with is you're talking like both ways. Maybe even if you disagree, you're kind of like you know, you're talking in that middle area. But the middle area doesn't sell papers. Middle area mm-hmm. doesn't sell. Web hits, it doesn't sell clickbait, you know, like right and left and extreme and everything extreme, you know, sells that. So it's just weird predicament for me. Like, how do we get past that? And I'm sure that's kind of what you guys have dealt with various different things, but how do we open up those conversation lines without having the media and the TV and the, where the internet is this one beautiful thing that brings people together, but it's also this awful thing that breaks people apart like every single day. So I don't know.
Well, I think, I mean, for me, I mean, just kind of in the work that, you know, that I do, you know, organizing people.
Yep.
We always say the best communication is one-on-one.
Mm-hmm.
I can text you all day long. I can put something on Facebook, and you're not going to get my tone.
Nope.
You're not going to get my intent. And you are.
You're distracted by the 12 comments that already came. You know, you're focused on everything else, but the actual conversation
of
it.
Absolutely, the pretty picture, and the like. Oh, I got to come up with something cool, and I've got to tweet this out too. You know,
what? I can't believe
that
jerk's response. Let's focus on that. You know, like ignoring the original point. You know?
Oh, he didn't respond. Oh, he's chicken. We were right. I knew it.
Got him.
So I mean, it sounds simplified, and it sounds very. I'm from Kansas. Sounds very country girl for me to say. I think the best thing is, you know, talking to people one-on-one. And I know that that's not realistic, that we're going to have, you know, we're just all going to hold hands. And, you know, that thing in the 80s or the 90s, I don't even remember, you know, Hands Across America. I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think that's realistic. And I'm not even sure what that was all about. I mean, just thinking from the electoral political standpoint that, and I've always known this, it's much more important to think about who your state legislators are and your mm-hmm. city council mm-hmm. and those folks who directly are going to affect your day-to-day life.
Yep.
And in those kind of situations, you can go have the conversation. You can have the conversation with your neighbor or the people around you, just right there, right around you. And talk to them about what's important. You know, let's talk. Our kids are important. Our health is important. You know, and start at the base level to understand we're not that far apart. And as much as we get fired up and mad, and there are some amazingly horrible decisions that have come out of an administration that do affect us, generally, across the board, the majority of us are not affected by who really is in the White House.
Mm.
We're affected more by our mayor and those on down the ticket. And so if we start to bond on those and get our ideas across and we start having those conversations with our neighbors, it's trickle up. It's, you know, it's absolutely trickle up. Yes, there are things that we need to battle from the top down, but baseline is we need to start from the bottom up.
Yeah, yeah.
And I know it's kind of an old adage. We've got to start at the grassroots. We absolutely do. Absolutely do if you're going to make long-term systemic changes.
Well, I mean, that's what you do in protesting, and it's all the small steps to kind of move forward, and it's the only way you can really do it, I guess, nowadays.
True.
Well, Renee, we appreciate your time tonight. If anybody wanted to say hi to you or anything, you have any kind of social media or anything you'd like to promote?
I do. I mean, everybody's welcome to send me any messages. I'm on Twitter and on Facebook at Ruby Renee. It's RUBYRENEE 425. And you can find me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and Snapchat, if you just pull that up.
Awesome. One last time, I have to ask, can you give me an Izzy story? We got to get one.
Now that you avoided the main point of this episode for 40 minutes. No.
Yeah. Healthcare is great.
You know, healthcare, this is going
to be blonde, and she came to visit me in Vegas, and we just had a wild good time in our own quiet little wild way. So whatever happened in Vegas stays in Vegas.
Hmm.
I lived there for years, and Isabel came and visited me.
Wow.
That's all I'm going to say.
I'm now a little more concerned than I thought it would be after this interview.
You got another 40 minutes now?
We could talk for hours about Isabel. She is one of my favorite people in the world.
Yeah. I mean, she's a sweetheart. I love her to death, and I'm a lucky person.
She's a really good kid.
All right.
He absolutely
well,
is.
Let's end the love affair here. And I'm going to call my mom now and talk about, Mom, what do you think about me?
Right?
Shut up, Scott.
I don't like you. I told you this. But Renee, thank you so much for giving us a few minutes, and good luck with everything.
Great. Thank you both very much. Have a great evening.
You too. Take care. All right. More interesting guests to the list, man.
Woo!
Before we do get out of here and get to a couple things, let's toot our own horn a little bit. Toot our horn. Go ahead.
Beep, beep. I figured you'd like that.
Toot our horn. Go. The worst hack, right? We're gonna toot our horn. We still got to do a whole Z Morning Zoo episode,
yeah.
Like wacky sound effects and awful bits, as opposed to our great bits all the time.
Amazing.
But we are booked, guys, through mid-November with guests. Like our goal this year was to have a guest every episode, and we have. The only one we technically maybe flubbed on was when we were on the other podcast, but we're still, that's with other people.
Yeah.
It's not just me and you. And maybe after the new year happens, maybe we'll still do, well, maybe we'll cut it back and do some episodes just us again and see what happens. And
go a little old school.
We'll always be guest-centric, I'll put it that way. But if this is your first time tuning in, we really tried to crush with the guests this year. It was kind of the goal. And so far, we're doing it. So we are booked through November. We got some good ones coming up. I don't know how you feel. I don't always love to announce them because I feel like it's going to jinx it. And if I announce them, then they're like,
yeah, I don't, because they could reschedule.
Yeah, it's happened a million times.
I mean,
all right. Well, then let's just talk about the last month before we go. So in the last month, we had Mark Summers. Yes, that Mark Summers from Double Dare. Ben Wyman from Dillinger Escape Plan.
Mm-hmm.
Zane Lamprey from Chug and Drinking Made Easy. Matt Pinfield. So that's the last month of episodes, really. And then a little bit before that was probably our penultimate episode, or whatever you say, the Lenny Dykstra episode, which is going to go down in folklore. And if you are a normal listener, you know that I mentioned it 500 times. I'm going to mention 500 times more because it's just an adventure that you need to go on. It's like a book, really.
Yeah. When you see Lenny Dykstra on the street, just yell verbal shenanigans, he won't acknowledge it. He'll go off on a tangent about something else.
No.
Something about his sister-in-law.
Yeah. Or he'll ask you for drugs. Either one.
Could happen.
Oh. I wanted to tell you, the shooting today, yesterday, Lester Spate, aka Terry Tate,
mm-hmm.
Posted something today that he was there at the shooting. I don't know if he was at the concert or whatnot, but he had like a video that I don't know. I got to read it again to make clear that up, so this might get cut. But I remember seeing something like on Facebook that he was like at the shooting, and he was the first time in his life he was afraid, you know, like that. And,
right? I mean, how can you not be in that situation? You can't joke around with that. I mean,
but,
I mean, the scariest thing was people were, like, laying on the ground, and then they would stop hearing shooting, and then somebody would get up, and the shooting would start again.
Just imagine, like, covering your girlfriend and take bullets, and you hear stories like that. It's just horrifying. Yeah. But I don't want to get on that right now.
No, no.
So let's change up.
Yeah, speaking of girlfriends and all.
I have one.
I do, too. Mm. Now, let me ask you. I think we kind of talked about it on the show before. When you dream, do you remember your dreams? Do they have clear stories? What happens here as you're staring outside?
No, I was just trying to see where Obi is. Do you see him?
Do not see him.
Hold on a second.
Oh, babe.
Oh, he's on the bed.
He was on the bed, ladies and gentlemen. He was on the bed.
It was a big emergency. Yep. Big emergency. All right, go ahead. Do I remember my dreams?
Yeah.
Every night, no. But I do remember occasional ones. Alex just said she had a dream the other day. She was running a race
mm-hmm.
with her, like, race friend. and they were chasing wolves from Game of Thrones.
Oh.
And every once in a while, they were stopping into craft beer bars to get supplies. And so I'm like, this sounds like the greatest dream ever.
Oh, my God. We got to make that a movie.
But I do remember dreams from time to time. Not all of them, though.
Yeah. Look, Izzy has the most lucid dreams on the planet. She constantly tells me about different dreams that she has. And this morning, I thought it was like one of the kickers of the... So she said, she calls me up and she says, I got to tell you about this dream I just had. You as in me, went off to Iran. I'm like, oh, I was in the war? She's like, no, you just went to Iran for some reason.
Oh, yeah.
And you call me up and you tell me that you built a little shack in one of the rooms of the Trump Tower.
There's a Trump Tower in Iran?
No, not in Iran. But back home in America at the Trump Tower.
And you need to go to Iran to tell her this.
I was in Iran for some reason. I don't know the specifics. Apparently I wasn't in the war, but I went to Iran for reason.
I would fear for your safety if you were in the war.
So I call her up and said, you know, I built the shack in there, but I need you to go there and install the electricity in there. So she says she's in the dream. She's like panicking, like, I don't know how to install electricity. I'm like, no, you gotta go. So she goes to the Trump Tower and she's like talking about how she like went through all security and everything like that with all her gear that she thinks will make electricity. And she goes up and apparently I made like this wood shack in the middle of a really classy room. And she's trying to figure out how to connect electricity into there, and she's getting flustered, and she's trying to call me, and I'm not picking up the phone because you know I'm really busy.
You're in
Iran.
Your wood shack, yeah.
Well, it's an international business wood shack.
Right.
So then she says she gets out of the shack, and she's like walking. She doesn't know what to do. She still
see
has
already
all
like
stuff.
The difference between my dreams and mine would be way shorter, like little shorter experience. This seems already like very.
She has everything in her dream. Yep. And she basically says, as she's like carrying stuff, Melania just walks by and she says she's dressed up like a hooker. Like specifically, she has like too much face makeup, like the push-up bra. And she's just walking around. She's like, oh, how's it going in the shack? She's like, oh, you know, I don't really know how to do electricity. And she's like, oh, it's okay. And she's like, oh, that's great. You know, I like you. I like you. I don't like your husband, but I like you. And she just said that was the end of the dream. She woke up. And she constantly has these different dreams.
Right.
And somehow I'm involved in all of them. In all of them, she's trying to get a hold of me, and I'm not picking up.
You should be like, get the hint, babe. Get the hint. I don't want to talk while you're sleeping. It's my one time of silence.
Yeah.
I'm thinking what's funny is like her dreams are really lucid, but these are just as lucid as your daydreams when you're talking to artificial penguins and what was it again? The penguins? You had all the characters that you talked
about? Chili Willy, yeah, the penguin. Ollie the octopus. That was the one I made up myself.
Right.
Like we had it was a big gang with Woody Woodpecker, if I recall. Yeah.
So that's your real life. This is happening to
that was my childhood
in dreams. dreams are. I know I told you, but the best dream I could ever remember was I was part of like the SEAL team that went and took down Saddam Hussein, and like we were in this weird mansion and like. I was like with them and certain like fireplaces would turn around and be other rooms and like I don't know, it was like a venture and I woke up like yeah we got him yeah.
Scott, it's 2015, yes we know we got him.
Even though we didn't Saddam, like we didn't really get him, he got hung, but
yeah
whatever. In my dream we were getting him.
Oh wow, man. But,
yep.
And then, but she constantly ended, like the other one was like apparently like her dad hooked her up to get an IT job at his place, and I was working there, and so was my cousin who my cousin's husband was there as well. But like she's going there, she has to do an interview. She's like, I don't really know IT. I don't know why they got me this interview, and I had to go back. I had to look over my patient back at home, and she's like panicking. And then she's like, I gotta calm down. She goes into the gift shop, and she's like, there's a girl there that used to be a nurse friend of hers from like 10 years ago. And she's like, oh my God, what are you doing here? And oh, I stopped nursing. I run this gift shop here in this IT facility.
Ah, the old gift shop.
Yeah. And she's talking to her for like 20 minutes. And then she's like, oh no, my interview. And she goes back and she found a note where it's like, we couldn't find you. And we'll have to reschedule the interview. And she's getting mad. And it's like, God damn it. I don't know IT. And I missed my interview. I got to come back here.
Well, very lucid.
Yeah.
Very lucid.
So many details. And imagine how I feel as I'm driving. I'm like, babe, I'm at work right now. I really need to go in the building. I can't really.
I always imagine that hopefully one day there will be the technology to take your dreams and be able to broadcast them onto
make
a screen.
Make it a video.
That'd be the greatest network ever. Greatest invention ever, just to watch what other people are dreaming about. And it actually wouldn't be a good thing. Like, you would have to, it would be like a clinic, like where you would have to, like, well, my dreams are private, like I don't want anybody viewing,
because this is the Playboy channel. Yeah, you gotta pay $9.99 a month for
you don't control what you dream, man. No. And like, imagine, like, you show a dream and some like sexy woman comes out and like your girlfriend's like, what is that? What were you dreaming about? What are you dreaming about?
I'm asleep. What do you want me to do?
What is that big boobed woman coming in here? My God, what is she doing to you?
Babe, I'm in Iran. I don't know what to do.
That would still be the coolest technology ever. But, yeah.
Hey, you want to play a game?
I do. Might as well.
All right.
I mean, this punk is only going to be probably 5 to 6 hours long.
Nah, that's fine.
Might as well play the game.
That's like 4 trips to, like, Seattle, you know? So,
I'm always down for a game.
Yeah. I got a little tournament here, Scott. If you might recall, we did one before about dead celebrities that you might want to bring back at the end of 2016. We brought back John Glenn, if you recall, from the tournament.
Yes.
It was down between John Glenn and Kimbo Slice, and you picked John Glenn.
Yes. Yes, I do.
All right. So what I got John here.
I just never thought I'd hear those two names in the same sentence.
It's awesome, right?
Yeah.
He's going to have a dream about that tonight. But I can't kung fu fight John Glenn in space. Where's Mike? He's not picking up the phone.
I better call him in from Tunisia. All right, what's the tournament here?
All right.
A new tournament.
Yeah, I got a little smaller one here. It's Babies of Celebrities of 2017. Basically, I'm going to give you two celebrities as a matchup, and you got to tell me which one you would prefer to be the baby of like, for any reason.
So I have to choose my parents?
Yeah, it's okay. Basically determined to figure out which celebrity parents would you want the most.
I like it. I like it.
All right,
I have to choose a couple or just one?
No, it's going to be one of the celebrities.
Couple. Good.
All right, I'm going to start with this one here. Jimmy Kimmel versus Tori Spelling.
Jimmy Kimmel all day long. Jimmy Kimmel comes from a comedy background. He could probably give me some tips. The Man Show is kind of fun.
That was a good one.
Tori Spelling, not a fan of anything.
Yeah. Seems like that was like ages ago, The Man Show.
Yeah. Well, so does Tori Spelling's career. That seems just as long as...
But she still got that spelling money, keep in mind.
What's that?
I mean, her father...
For a second, I thought that was like a new show, like Spelling Money. I'm like, it's probably on TLC or Bravo. All right, yes, all right. 100%.
Mark Zuckerberg versus Janet Jackson.
I want Janet Jackson.
Janet Jackson. I'm a little surprised by that. Figure you go up with the money.
Yeah, here's the thing.
I mean, granted, Jackson still have decent money.
Jackson's got good money, and think about it. Once you're in the Jackson family, that's like unlocking Pandora's box. Like, you're going to find out all the mysteries that everyone wants to know. You know, like, you're married, you go over there for Thanksgiving, you figure out what's wrong with, just to see who Tito's with and who's who Jermaine's with and what they say about Michael. Like, do they talk about Michael? Do they not get brought up at all at the table? Do they have money? Do they still record songs? Do all the dirt on Michael alone would be worth having Janet mom.
Oh, okay. All right. We got that.
Mark Zuckerberg.
He seems boring.
Yeah, exactly.
He really does. All right.
As opposed to being in the Jacksons? That seems like a choose-your-own-adventure book.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. This is a soccer matchup here. Ronaldo versus Landon Donovan. Ugh.
I want Ronaldo to be my dad because I just want to look pretty hot, man.
His stuff is pretty tight. I can't deny that.
I just want to look chiseled from the gods themselves. He pissed me off as a soccer player, but he's also amazing.
Yep.
Amazing, and he's pretty hot.
All right. I hear you. All right. Adam Clayton from U2 or Beyonce?
Beyonce all day. That means my dad's Jay-Z, man.
Nice.
We own part of the Nets. Destiny's Child.
He got rid of his. He's a manager now.
Oh, I am Destiny's child. You know, like yes. And I think Beyonce is a very attractive woman.
All right. But she's your mom, so you can't.
Oedipus syndrome, baby.
All right. Mel Gibson versus George Clooney.
George Clooney? Mel Gibson's in some of my favorite movies, but I don't want that. Your dad was an anti-Semite your whole life. Mm. Interviews, what was your dad like? What happened? Are you anti-Semitic?
You only want your parents to be known for complaining about not wearing the proper pants.
Yeah. I guess there's that too, but it's better than being really anti-Semitic and crazy.
So, okay.
Yes.
Jason Statham versus Bradley Cooper.
Bradley Cooper.
Wow, I'm a little surprised by that.
Good looks. Not a big fan of the Transporters, so I know he's probably badass and knows a lot of kung fu and stuff, but I wouldn't mind some Bradley Cooper looks in my life, you know. You know, in the most hetero way, he's a good-looking man.
I hear you. All right. Venus Williams versus Derek Jeter.
Jeter.
DJ.
I don't think that even needs an explanation. It's Derek Jeter.
Yeah, but you could add Venus Williams' abilities and her husband is the guy who made Reddit.
New York is like if they insulted my dad, they're insulting New York.
Okay.
You know, they're listen, I'm not a Yankee fan, but it's still Derek Jeter. I mean, Jeter. My dad also slept with.
I just thought of something. He owns the Marlins.
Yep.
You can get the guy from to do the Marlins song.
Scott Stapp.
Yeah.
Also, my dad has arguably one of the greatest track records of women in ever.
That is true.
Yeah. I mean, ridiculous lineup.
He hit Mariah Carey, Jessica and nobody Alba. Talked about it in the tabloids.
Mm-hmm.
That's an accomplishment.
Yeah, and listen, Derek Jeter, for some reason, painted an image that he could do no wrong. He literally has to be the gunman in that shooting for people to think badly of him. he's a god.
Gotcha.
All right,
and the last one in the first round, former Cowboys quarterback Tony Romo versus current Redskins quarterback Kirk Cousins.
Let's go. Kurt, bring it on, Kurt. Come on, Kurt. Be my daddy.
You like it. That's a phrase.
You like it. Yeah, I like Kurt, though. I like Kirk Cousins.
He's good.
I don't dislike Kirk Cousins. Yeah. I never liked Tony Romo.
All right.
So, yeah.
Kirk Cousins. All right. Let's go to the second round.
All right, here we go.
I got a feeling I know where this is going. Kirk Cousins versus Derek Jeter.
Derek Jeter.
Yeah.
Derek Jeter is a god.
All right.
Among people, anyway. Not by me, but.
Let's see. This Jimmy Kimmel versus Janet Jackson.
Again, I'm thinking that Jackson mystery just adds a spice to life that Jimmy Kimmel can't provide. Maybe I could be the, maybe we are, I could recreate the photos of me holding, holding her boob. Maybe we, make a song, that all Scream right. video with her and Michael,
stop, don't you make your wanna stop me, pressuring me,
like a mother son version. Yeah.
Ronaldo versus Beyonce.
Ooh, the battle of really pretty people here.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now I'm thinking motherly instinct, Beyonce celebrates her children. Like, she always has the big belly and, like, the photos. And whereas Ronaldo, he might have children all over the world. I might just be one of many.
Like 300.
Yeah.
Like Cromartie.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I'm going with Beyonce, more of a mothering figure. But if the two of them could get together and make one baby.
Oh. Oof. Oh, the world.
You couldn't even
end.
Look at. You couldn't even look at it for a couple months. You just blow your eyes away. He's too beautiful. He's too.
If I look, my eyes will melt.
He's too beautiful.
All right, Bradley Cooper versus George Clooney.
Hmm. Older and distinguished, or younger and good looking. And I'm going to go with George.
Ooh.
George has a little bit of
he's got
mystery to him also. There's something weird about him. Maybe he'll let me in on that mystery. He's got a little style. He's somehow kept the younger generation's imagination about him. Whereas Bradley Cooper, he's hot now, but he's going to be hot like 20 years from now. Where George Clooney's been, I mean, ER is a long time ago at this point.
Yeah, a couple decades.
Yep. So,
all right, we're going to the semifinals here. Janet Jackson versus Beyonce.
Oh my God, this is an epic. This is like two Janet Jacksons battling each other.
The original versus the current.
Yeah, exactly. The late 90s, 2000s Janet, or the.
You can use any logic to determine why you select them.
Again, I think I have to go. Then again, do I want to be in the Jackson family? Like, is everyone like Michael? That might could be dangerous for me as a child.
Yeah.
Where Beyonce seems like...
We never heard from Blanket.
Yeah. And he wasn't one of them hung off the balcony?
Yeah, that was the Blanket. Third one, Blanket.
For motherly instinct alone, I'm going to go Beyonce, Mama B.
All right. Derek Jeter versus George Clooney.
Derek Jeter's got to win this one. I like sports, so that plays into it. My dad's Derek Jeter. I feel like, especially if I'm staying where I live now, if I say my dad's George Clooney, everyone's like, well, okay, well, he's George. But my dad is Derek Jeter. Like, he's just untouchable.
Well, I don't know. This finals could be untouchable. Derek Jeter versus Beyonce.
You know what's funny? I feel like he's going to swoop in soon and just take Beyonce.
I won't put it past him.
No.
Jay-Z would be like, what?
No one would say anything either. I'd be like, oh, that's just Derek.
That's just Derek. That's what he does.
Derek. Derek, an above-average hitting shortstop, just, just swoops in. Very, very overrated player, but swoops in. A god in New York. He's like the guy in high school. That, like, everyone's like, that guy's not even, like, he's dumb. He's not that great at sports, but, like, all the girls like him for some reason, and he's got them all mesmerized.
And you could be an off-product of that.
I got to go Derek Jeter. I got to go Derek.
All right.
Derek he's not my favorite player, but he seems to have the world tricked, if that makes any sense. Listen, do I think he's a good player? Yeah, he was a good player. Do I think he's all-time great?
No.
No. Was he clutch as hell? Absolutely. Did he capture the imagination of the New York Yankee fans? Oh, my God. And even baseball. And he somehow was able to deflect everything his entire career, any criticism ever. And people think he's, like, the greatest guy ever. Like, he can do no wrong. He can do no wrong. He can pull, like, LT-type maneuvers, and people will be like, eh. He's just Derek
Jeter. I don't know
Jeter.
Why Derek Jeter just broke Joe Theismann's leg, but good for him.
I didn't mean that. I meant more of like the bad LT, not the hard-playing LT.
Well, Scott, I want to congratulate you on being Derek Jeter's son. Have a happy and wonderful life with him.
Father's Day is going to rule. all right, let's get... Oh, God, let's get out of here.
All right.
What do you got to promote?
I will...
All right. Just end it right there. That'd be great. Let's get out of here. All right.
All right. Dun, dun, dun.
We gotta promote.
I will promote the Red Cross again, redcross.org. We still got plenty of people having issues in Houston, Florida, obviously the devastation in Puerto Rico. Even the U.S. Virgin Islands got hit pretty hard. We need to help out our fellow people as much as we can. This is a moment to be charitable if there's any. So go to redcross.org and help out with some funds for the charities.
Hey, don't forget about pumpkin spice.
Oh, yes. I'm back doing pumpkin spice whatever this month. I've already done 2 episodes. The page is now called Michael Berlew Random Stuff. Going to keep chugging along with that. I also going to have Tonight on the Walking Dead later this year.
Ooh.
Yeah.
When's that come out?
I had to Google it. That's how bad.
That's how you know
that's
no
how
one
long,
cares.
Yeah.
No one cares.
The 22nd.
All right. Tonight on the Walking Dead. Yeah. We want to also try to put some more videos up and do some more things. So hopefully we'll be able to put some stuff on there too and drive some traffic. So yeah, check that out. I guess I'll just quickly promote. This Sunday there are a couple tickets left for Table 42 with headliner Kevin Israel, Bobby Gaines, and KP Burke. Great
hell
show.
Of a lineup.
$35 for dinner and a show. And I also want to promote October 26th. We're back at Tap House 15 after another awesome night. But we had our good friend Joe Fernandez headlining with Kevin Dabrowski, Sean Morton, and Don Mikulowski. So
very nice.
Guys, we've been doing a great job. You guys have been doing a great job listening and sharing and, you know, contacting us and whatnot. So keep doing that. It really helps the podcast out. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter and stuff. But Instagram, we seem to do a good job of being able to show our past guests, which is the best part because we get new listeners. It's like, well, we've done a lot of really interesting things that we are proud of.
I mean, I made up that list a couple weeks back. It's just amazing how the different names just you almost. As incredible as they were, you go, oh, my God, yeah, that's right, we did.
Yeah. Sometimes I'm like, wow, I forgot about that. Like, that's good. So do that and follow it. And if you want a T-shirt, contact us. I still have a whole box of them sitting underneath my feet. So with that, guys, life is funny. Laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back. Life is funny. Laugh at it.
Rest in peace, Tommy.
She's a good girl, loves her mama, loves Jesus in America too. She's a good girl, is crazy about Elvis, loves horses and her boyfriend too. And it's a long living in Reseda, there's a freeway running through the yard. And I'm a bad boy, cause I don't even miss her. I'm a bad boy for breaking her heart.